apartheid system there. Apparently, he was the very first black African person to be arrested for walking on the pavement by a police officer, and then he was duly charged, went to court, and then during the court session, they tried him for being cheeky, for walking on the pavement, and of course, he said that it was his right. And for the very first time in the history of Africa, he won that case against the white policeman in 1918. And the people that had actually educated him, for him to be able to stand up for his rights, for him to be able to articulate his case, were Scottish missionaries of the Presbyterian Church. That was the connection that I found between Africa's first sort of a resistance leader. African resistance and the Scottish people. And I found it. Exactly 100 years ago, in April 1896, there was born a man whose name was Lamek Koniwaka Kadali. He was born in what was called Nyasaland, which is now Malawi. In 1908, he entered the Livingstonia Missionary Institute, and he excelled there as a student. By the age of 16, in 1913, he graduated as a qualified school teacher. 2 years later, he was heading his own schools. He was, you know, district head, you know, responsible for some schools in what was then Nyasaland, Malawi. He became restless, and by 1918, he had settled in Cape Town, South Africa. And he immediately fell foul of the South African race laws, and everybody who knows about South African history knows, you know, the notorious apartheid system there. Apparently, he was the very first black African person to be arrested for walking on the pavement by a police officer, and then he was duly charged, went to court, and then during the court session, they tried him for being cheeky, for walking on the pavement, and of course, he said that it was his right. And for the very first time in the history of Africa, he won that case against the white policeman in 1918. And the people that had actually educated him, for him to be able to stand up for his rights, for him to be able to articulate his case, were Scottish missionaries of the Presbyterian Church. That was the connection that I found between Africa's first sort of a resistance leader. By 1919, our man, Mr. Clemens Kadali, he had changed his name. He started organizing dock workers around the Cape Town area. And in February of the same year, 1919, he formed what was called the Industrial and Commercial Workers Union. He successfully organized the first strike by dock workers in December of 1919. And for 3 months, Cape Town was shut down, and there was no single imports or exports that left through that port, because of the single, you know, the singular efforts of this gentleman, Mr. Clemens Kadali. By the age of 20, he had become so much a thorn in the South African government that they wanted to deport him. And again, for the second time, the Scottish Presbyterian Church came to his rescue, and that deportation was stayed. Needless to say that he continued fighting for, you know, for his rights and being a leader in South Africa. And he successfully led one of the biggest trade unions that started in South Africa, starting with the Industrial Commercial Workers Union, which by 1930 was available, had members in South Africa, in Zambia, what is now Zambia, in Zimbabwe, and also in Lesotho and Swaziland. And there were 130,000 members belonging to that union. So contrary to what we have heard, contrary to what colonialism said, that Africans were taught resistance as a necessary process of colonialism. Actually, Africans started organizing themselves right at the, you know, beginning of the last century, and people like Clemens Kadali were in the forefront of pioneering the African trade union movement. Initially, Africans, of course, had started fighting for basic things like to be paid wages in money, because previously they were paid in, you know, in beans or cornmeal or whatever, right? So they said, we also want to be part of the modern economy, and we wanted to pay them the money. If one looks at very quickly at what happened in South Africa, industrialization came to South Africa in 1867 with the discovery of diamonds and golds, right? The very first strike organized by Africans was in 1882. Now, you will not read about this in your ordinary everyday textbook, talking about, you know, how Africa has fought for its rights and resistance in Africa. But if one went to the NUM organization, org.za, which is the National Union of Miners for South Africa, that history is well documented there. One looks at also at a case like in Nigeria. The very first strike, the very first trade union, for example, in Nigeria was formed in 1912. Right, this was by disgruntled civil servants. Soon after that, railway workers also organized, and then teachers quickly became, you know, unionized. Now, remember at this time that Africans neither had civil rights nor any political rights, and therefore, of course, they didn't even have the right to organize. Right, 1912, the first union is formed. The British colonial government only recognized unions 26 years after the event. So again, it's not true to say that trade unions were formed as part of the colonial system. Trade unions were already there, and then the British colonial system only recognized this fact in the case of Nigeria 26 years later. By 1945, there were 43,000 registered trade union workers in Nigeria. And 43,000 of these people, of these workers went on a 40-day strike to fight for better wages and the conditions of service in 1945. So for 40 days they were on strike, right? Subsequently, trade unions have flourished in Nigeria in spite of the military, you know, dictatorships that have trampled on workers' rights and human rights in that country, but trade unions have still persisted. One also looks at the case of Zambia, a country that is very rich in copper. And they had a very booming economy during the colonial times. By 1940, there were 155,000 members who had unionized in the copper industry of Zambia. So these kind of successes that were happening, I mean, I only cited three countries here. Okay, South Africa, Nigeria, and Zambia. They were being duplicated across the entire breadth and length of Africa, and they brought in a lot of new leaders who also took up not just the trade union, traditional trade union issues of better wages, you know, collective bargaining and so on and so forth, but they started agitating for even greater political rights, because again this was in a context where Africans still did not have any political rights. A leader such as Sekou Toure, who became the first president of Guinea in 1958, he was the leader of what was called United Workers of Black Africa. Now, just from the very name of that union, United Workers of Black Africa, Toure had a vision where not only he was going to be leader of people in his own country, but he was looking at a more Pan-African vision. Leaders like Joshua Nkomo from Zimbabwe, who later became one of the vice presidents after independence, and also Shaka Stevens of Sierra Leone, they all came from the trade union movement, articulated trade union issues, but also went on to a wider political agenda and successfully led their countries, you know, from colonialism. So one conclusion that we can make is that Africa's trade union history is essentially one of resistance itself, emanating from the issues that were faced by an emerging working class. However, this resistance has continued because even though a lot of the trade unions in Africa joined into a marriage of convenience at independence with the ruling political parties, they have now turned in the main to fight against, corruption, and they're also fighting for pro-democracy and governance in the same countries. One easily thinks of what happened in countries like Mali, in Malawi, in Zambia. And one can also look at COSATU in South Africa, which was in the forefront for fighting against apartheid in that country. One looks at the current situation, for example, in Zimbabwe, where the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions is now fighting against the Robert Mugabe regime in that country too. So while there was resistance in the past, this resistance is still continuing because trade unions are in the forefront as civic organizations, as part of civil society. They are fighting for better governance in their countries. Other issues that we can also look at where the social justice activism by the trade unions include issues like equality, human resource development, and decent work. No longer is it sufficient these days just to say, I have got a job, but the quality of the job also matters, right? And this is where the whole concept of decent work comes in, and trade unions are in the forefront of that. I know that this forum is talking a lot about poverty alleviation efforts, and trade unions are in the forefront fighting against that. They are also very much involved in organizing. There are new sectors that need to be organized in Africa. Gender equality has not yet been achieved in Africa. And of course, more women need to be organized so that they also come aboard as trade union members, A, but also as trade union leaders. We have a very vibrant informal, so-called informal sector, right? The micro sector in Africa, that also needs to be organized because there's a lot of exploitation going on in there. There's globalization and trade unions are in the forefront fighting against all those exploitative forces in that particular sector. Last but not least, the trade union movement is very much active in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Why? Because it is mostly the productive forces, it is workers who are actually getting killed by this disease. So obviously trade unions have a vested interest in making sure that workers are sensitized, workers are informed, employers come into partnership with the trade unions and the governments, and together they can come up with a sustainable strategy to fight against HIV/AIDS. Trade unions are also fighting at the international level for workers to access treatment so that also medicines are affordable. And lastly, that the patent, so-called patent rights of the multinational companies are overridden, and therefore workers can access the medication that they need for the treatment of HIV and AIDS. I'm almost coming towards the end of my time here, but I'm saying that 100 years ago, we started with a very pioneering group of men and women in Africa who started fighting for their rights. As we now enter into a second millennium, second century rather, for fighting for the same rights, we've got new issues that face the African trade union today. I've only touched the surface of some of these issues. I would like to personally salute all those men and women who are in jail today, who are being incarcerated, some of whom have been killed by African governments fighting for these rights because African governments are seeing them as being... Right. African governments are seeing them as being a pain in the thorn, a thorn in the side. And that is because quite a number of these African governments have gone into unholy alliances with the IMF, with the World Bank, to make Africa seem as an attractive destination for foreign investment. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for that. And I say, aluta continua, victory is certain.